Welcome back. This is Newsfile. It's your most authoritative news analysis platform. And here on Newsfile, we put Ghana first. Now, Start Working Your Alliance, call us. Let's know your reality. The professors who are joining us to tell us about the analyze the economic circumstances that we find ourselves want to hear from you so that we can put some context to what is happening now. 0302-211691 or 92. The numbers are 0302-211691 or 92. And I'll urge you to be as brief as possible to tell us your exact situation. When we say inflation, what is your understanding of it? Is it the cost of the bread you buy today as against what you bought a month ago that is used to determine your inflation? What are you doing about your feeding situation, your transportation situation? Is that what tells you the situation you are in? Is that how you determine the inflation or what? My guests this morning are Godfred Bokwing, Professor of Finance and Economist, University of Ghana. Here in the studio also is Joseph Obeng, National President, Ghana Union of Traders Association, that is GUTA. They're always looking for dollars to be able to do their transactions. Dr. Humphrey Kwesi Enyimdake is President, Association of Ghana Industries, AGI. Dr. Theo Echampong is political risk analyst and economist. He also joins us. Gentlemen, thank you all so very much for making time to join us this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
Right. Now, Kwame, you're calling us from Adenta.
Yes,
within a minute, what's your situation? What's your reality of the economic conditions?
Hello.
Kwame, go ahead. We are listening to you. Okay, John. John, let's hear you. John, you are on.
Samson, good morning.
Good morning. Where are you calling from?
I'm from Nandom, please.
Nandom.
Yes, please.
Tell us your reality.
Samson, actually, what we are experiencing in this country is very, very difficult. You see, you don't understand why you have to go and buy something today. The next moment you go back to the same shop, the things are increased. Do you know that at the current moment, people are bringing fuel from across Burkina into Ghana to give vehicles to go to Kumasi and other places? If things are getting out of hand, people have to cross into Burkina.
Okay, so when you call, tell us about your circumstance. Thank you. Brahima, you're calling from Jamestown. Let's hear you.
Yes, Samson, good morning.
Morning.
Okay, thanks very much for the opportunity. Today in Ghana, things are very difficult. To my understanding, inflation simply is the rise in the prices of goods. In Ghana today, everybody can testify the way things are very expensive. I just want to say that if you go to the market now to buy a bunch of plantain, it costs around 20 to 30 Ghana cedis. So our leaders must sit up.
You bought a bunch of plantain for how much previously?
30 Ghana cedis.
You bought it for how much previously?
It used to be around 7 cedis to 12 cedis, thereabout.
Okay, thank you. Abbas, you're calling from Ofenso. What's your reality? Don't tell us what you think other people are going through.
Yeah, something. I'm a farmer. I'm growing maize and other things.
Okay.
Something. I used to buy this weedicide. In fact, way back 2015, I was buying it around 12 cedis per bottle. 12 cedis. Today, something. I'm buying it 58 cedis.
You don't mean that?
Seriously?
You are not exaggerating this?
Come on, something.
You are not exaggerating?
No, Saturday you come, I'm buying it 58, 59. So something, the cost of production in farming has increased. Something, it is very, very bad. Very, very bad. It's making the farm very, very difficult nowadays to grow of maize.
Okay.
Something today, bag of.
Okay, thank you, Abbas. Evans, you're calling from Doma Hinkro. Let's hear you, Evans.
Thank you, Samson. This is Evans from Doma Hinkro. Samson, I want to be very practical. I'm a government worker. I will not be quoting how much I earn, but this is what we've been doing. We used to buy, in Doma, for example, our weekly market day is on Tuesday. So the family buys foodstuffs that we'll be using for the week. In just about 6 months, let me say, the beginning of this year, we used to buy food that was costing us around 80 cedis to take us through the week until the next Tuesday. Now we have to buy around 150. For the same food items, we have to spend about 150. Mm. And in fact, it is very frustrating. This is just the food items. And any other thing has increased. The cost of transportation to work has increased. Other things that we don't need from the market, you buy from the supermarket, everything, everything. And I think the situation is getting worse day after day.
The government has given you some cola, right? Okay, let's go to Kofi. Kofi, you're calling from Tema.
Hi, something.
Hi, let's hear you. What's your reality?
My reality is that I've had to literally cut back. Not too long ago, things that were just basic. I have a family of five. Kids in school, but for the first time, I'm considering, do I have to change my kids' school whole lot? It's not like I'm a heavy spender, just the basics.
Mm.
Went to the shop recently, deodorant. Something that I have teenage kids. Something that as a parent, you can't do without. Something that I was paying 13 cedis. The last time I paid 32 cedis in a shop, I thought this is unreal. I came home complaining to my wife, and my wife said that, oh, yesterday I bought it for the same thing, 35. So I had to just sell. And I'm thinking, what sort of society that we're talking about, matter of man?
Mm.
Things has literally doubled, not 50%. We talk of inflation being 31%. But if we are going to be very honest with ourselves in this country, everything has shot up, not less than 50%. But how much salaries are people taking? My salary, and I'm a middle income earner, I'm not down there. I've had to now ask myself, we turn off this light. Like basic things that I never used to worry about. Yep. Now, provisions, what we term provisions, grocery.
Mm. Mm. Okay, so let's go to Ni. Ni, you are calling from Asylum Down.
Yes, something. So, I have dogs in my house, and hello, am I
yes,
all right?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I have dogs in my house, and two dogs. Currently, I can't feed them. Reason is that dog food, which I used to buy for 270 cedis, has now shot to 480 and 520. Now the problem is that I'm torn between giving those dogs out, right, or killing them, you know, because feeding them has become difficult. Two, you will need to kill them because these bad guys are around. You don't have dogs, and situations are hard.
Mm.
Conditions have become terrible, difficult. So they will come robbing you. That's a reality.
All right.
That is one of many problems with somebody like myself.
Thanks for sharing your reality, Patrick. You are calling us from Germany. Patrick, let's hear you.
Thank you, Samson. Unfortunately, you were talking about Ghana crisis, but I want to let us know about globally. For instance, here in Germany, what I was buying oil like 89 cents. Now almost 2 euros. A reality. You can Google it and see. Potato, the people were buying 2 euros.
I think we just lost We just lost him there. Okay, that's unfortunate. Okay, maybe I'll stop here and then come to my guest in the studio. Okay, Peter, you be my last call. Peter, you're calling from Cape Coast. What's your reality, Peter?
Yeah, my reality is all about the inflation something. You know, it's because that the government does not have a regulatory body that when things goes up in general...
Peter, tell us your reality. Tell us your reality. We have the experts here. They'll tell us about what government needs to do or is not doing right.
Yeah, the reality is that we work with Ghana Cocoa Board, okay? And when we used to buy fuel, like 10 people can use it to make all the rounds in the bush. But right now, there has been an inflation. We can't even buy the petrol again. So we are stuck, and payments are also not coming. So everything is messed up.
Mm. All right. Thank you. Thank you all for calling and sharing with us. I'll begin with Professor Bokwin. Can you relate all that you are ready to, you know, sort of spew to us here to what they are talking about?
Yeah, they are the real economists. Mm-hmm. We are at the point where we can see individual differences, but the broad impact is clear. They are not faking it, right? So this presents a clear situation where you don't need to study economics in a certain special way to appreciate how inflation is real. And you can't discuss inflation and think that it's theory, because this is impacting life at the micro level, at household level, at the firm level, at the national level, and then at the global level. So that is where we find ourselves. It's unfortunate. And I'm happy some are responding appropriately. It is not only the country that must do austerity or fiscal consolidation. Individuals must also do some kind of austerity. What can I trade off? What can I cut down?
Someone wants to change the school that his children...
Precisely. Okay, so, and then also, even in terms of diet, what combination should we choose? Should we eat outside regularly, or you need to have that? And the reason that has to be contextualized is that the way inflation would affect you will be different from the way it would affect me. It will be different from the way it would affect you, because our consumption patterns are not the same. Mm-hmm. So depending on your consumption pattern, my consumption pattern, your consumption pattern, the marginality, the magnitude of the effect would vary. And that is why individuals must look at their circumstances. Firms must look at their circumstances. Countries must also look at their circumstances and see the best way to respond. Probably from the income side, if you're a public sector worker, maybe you may not be able to adjust your salary, but thankfully, COLA will kick in probably at the end of this month or so. Of course, if you add that together with the increment we had at the beginning of the year, the real wage is still negative, right? So, but of course, you are being met halfway. Then you have to focus a bit more on the expenditure side, right? And align your lifestyle, see necessities. This is not a time you confuse want with needs, right? You have to measure on your needs, right? And see what you can trade off somewhere along the line. Some kind of coping strategies that we all have to develop and all of that. And I believe that whilst you do all of this, remember, for us in Africa, we are like Liverpool. We never sleep alone. We never walk alone. We grew up in a congregation. You must still do that kind of a family social responsibility, because there are so many. In fact, others are impacted much more.
That's right.
Than people. So some of the people who are complaining here, mm-hmm. somebody will wish yeah. they had even a quarter of that. Mm-hmm. So let's still bear in mind that the socially excluded, the marginalized, the less to do in society, they must still find some space within our budget rigidities to be able to keep body and soul together in difficult times like this. Mm-hmm. It will only work well if we are able to pull everybody along. It is not sufficient to say, I'm okay, and all of that. So this.
How does the reality hit you when you buy fuel?
Look, the last time I told my wife I was going to buy a bicycle, and it's like, hold on, I'm waiting for her approval, right? I live so close to my workplace, so okay. I don't feel it that much. So right. sometimes it's easy for me. I park my car, I walk to the office,
right.
and all of that. So again, you have to look at all of these things, and probably visiting here and there and driving all of that. That's fine. But one of the days, I joined Trotro to test 7. I parked my car, joined the
Trotro. I commute. You know, I drive, and when I'm having to spend close to, say, $1,000, you know, and it just hits me that, look, you're buying fuel and it's costing you so much. Like, how did we come here? Okay, so Guta, let's hear from Joseph Obeng, national president of the Ghana Union of Traders Association. Tell us your reality before we come and talk about, you know, what it is that you want to be done or what you think is wrong.
Yeah, our capital has been spirited away since December 2021, and the dollar was 6.4, and now we have to contend with 10, because by Monday it will be there from the trend. And so it means that my capital would have been spirited away by above 40%. I did not do anything bad. I did not misapply my capital to drink wine or a cheese for women, but the capital is spirited away. And that's the reality that we are facing. It means that
the thing you bought for 100,000 about a month ago, you need about how much to buy today?
So let me tell you, my goods arrived. My capital, my working capital is 640,000, and it was converted to $100,000 in December 2021. That's beginning of this year. So beginning of this year, my goods arrived. I've sold, because it takes me about 5 months to dispose of my goods. Now I'm going to buy the goods. I have to go and find. As for yesterday, I purchased 9.7. So it means that I have to go and find 970,000 Ghana cedis before I can go get my capital, the $100,000 that I'm trading with. If I'm not able to have a top up, because my main capital was 640.
That's right.
That's what I used to trade, and it was converted to $100,000. If I do not have the top up, it means that now my capital have dwindled to about $65,000. So I will only be able to import that much. Meaning that if I used to buy 140 footer container or 240 footer containers, let's say, of goods, now I will only be able to buy only 140 footer. So my capital
is gone without you
doing anything wrong. That's my reality. But let me talk about what the sentiment that our customers, they are our customers, and when they show these sentiments, the impact comes directly on me. So my my consumer, my final consumer, is now lamenting that he's not able to buy the same quantity of goods that he used to buy. It means that it will affect my turnover.
That's right.
So when it affects my turnover, because this business that we do not do it in isolation.
That's right.
And now because of inflation, my customer find it difficult because his purchasing power has reduced to the barest minimum. And so he cannot buy the goods much as he was able to buy, and my turnover is curtailed, meaning that I will not be able to service my debt at the bank or to service my supplier's credit, because most of these things are given on credit to us. So if your capital is a borrowed one, then you are in a serious problem. And now, all the indicators of trading have been affected negatively. The interest rate have gone up. Inflation have gone up, and exchange rate have gone up. So as a businessman, I'm confused. But when I go to the inflation, the inflationary trends and all that, I always say that, you see, when you listen to them, some were talking about imported goods.
That's right.
And some were talking about the local goods. So if you take the imported goods, it is not because there's excessive liquidity in the system or more money in the system chasing fewer goods. No, it's an accumulation of cost. Because from the where go, when I go to China, because of the impact of the COVID, the freight charges and all that, the prices that I used to buy have doubled.
That's right.
The freight charge alone have increased from $3,000 to over $12,000. And that's what Biden said, that most of the prices that have gone up in the U.S. is because of the cartel that is being formed by these shipping lines.
Okay. So let you hold on for now. Let's go to Dr. Humphrey Kwesi Ayimdake, President, Association of the Ghana Industries. What can you tell us about your reality? We just want to get down to know what the real problems you are facing are. Before we begin, for you, the same people, to tell us what the solutions will be.
All right, thank you, Samson, and good morning to colleagues in studio and out. Yes, the reality is that on our production lines, we have drastic increase in various cost inputs. And therefore, we have no other choice than to translate it to our final product that goes to our customers. Secondly, on our logistics fleet, we've come to the realization that the volume of products we move around has also dropped. So that it tells you that the extent of imports on bulk products has gotten a hit. And I presume when we proceed, we will tell you that the volume of businesses has also dropped. And I can also go on to say that so on that space, we see a bit of contraction in the extent of operations of our customers. And there are real challenging issues that we see in there. And then finally, I also add to it that the cascading effect of this exchange rate or the rate of depreciation is also worsening the plight of planning and also giving credibility to our international lines that we use in trading. So we are really exposed, and as much as the country is also being downgraded, private sector players that enjoy international credit lines either are being cut or being eliminated totally, and therefore its implication in the business space is severe, and we really need to sit up. Thank you.
How are your members, how are they, you know, as it were, managing the circumstances? Do we have situations where some are beginning to fold up already?
That might be an opportunity to seed out your market share if you choose to fold up. Rather, you realize that multinationals and that have sister companies in other jurisdictions will then fall on their partners and possibly bring in finished goods instead of producing it here. So therefore, it adds further pressure on the city. Technically, that is not their modus operandi. So they will not fold up immediately. They don't seek to seed out their market. They'll rather find other means to keep their market share by importing finished product as against raw materials to be processed. Others are now going on the market to compete with other stakeholders in getting the dollars. And therefore, you need to jack up your pricing. You don't fold up, you increase pricing and make adjustment for your labor, and then hope that someday the right things will be done to keep you afloat.
All right, thank you very much. Dr. Theo Echampong, you have been reminding us a bit of what happens if the fundamentals are weak. You spend the whole week tormenting us over that. So from where you sit and from the interactions that you have with business people, what is going on? And I mentioned on my handle that I spoke with two very influential business leaders in the course of this week, and it got me really thinking, because I didn't sit up to think about the situation from the perspective that they gave until I listened to them. And I discovered that we are in very, very serious crisis.
Yeah, good morning, Samson. The reality is things are very, very tough for a lot of Ghanaians at the level of the household, so individuals like you and I, but also at the level of businesses. In fact, I left Ghana just a week ago. I was on the ground for 2 weeks on a separate research project. And anytime I'm there, I take the time to speak to ordinary Ghanaians on the streets. And my trip took me around bits of Accra. So I was around your Osu, Laboni areas. I went to Amasaman.
Yes, I followed you sharing some of those interactions.
Exactly. Mm. The point really is I spoke to not less than maybe about 100 people. So it's not exactly scientific, but the concerns that they expressed is very much what you're hearing from the people that we spoke to or who called into the program a few minutes ago, that they are struggling. They are having to spend more money on the same goods that they used to buy. And they also are having to make extra adjustments, right, in that regard. Prof. Buckman was talking about the fact that in Ghana we have family social responsibility, especially if you are the middle class,
yeah,
where you may have 6-7 people who are dependent, right, on you. And so you have to use that same mega resource to more or less support them. And even I am feeling it. So I filled my tank when I was in Ghana.
I kid you not. It can be very draining.
Yes. So I filled my tank. Before last year or early this year when I was around, I was filling it for about 350 Ghana cedis, right? Sometimes 370. That's a small cola. This time around, I was spending about 500 cedis to fill that tank. And that is the reality. And when I was there, you also had a lot of people, even here in the UK, you have people from Ghana who would reach out to you to sort of support them one way or the other. So it is tough all around in Ghana. And I worry particularly because it's not just the middle class feeling the pinch. You have a lot more of our people also at the lower tiers of the society. So at the traffic light, I was talking to one lady who sells, you know, PK, and another one that sells hacks, right, as we call it, and pure water. And they were telling you that what they used to actually make before, it's not the same as they're making now. And one thing that was also very obvious to me 2 weeks ago in Accra was that there was less traffic on the roads in the morning, mm-hmm. right? So what that was telling me implicitly is that some people are making adjustment by deciding not to drive their cars. Maybe people are carpooling, but the difficult economic circumstances is forcing them to make certain, you know, cuts to their living and lifestyle choices. And that is quite worrying and concerning in that regard. Mm-hmm. The challenge is that unlike here in the UK, maybe where you have some social safety nets and safeguards which you can resort to, you don't necessarily have that in Ghana. So to an extent, you are out there on your own in that regard.
Mm. Maybe we start on this note from your end. What are the implications of the downgrades by S&P, CCC/C+, is it? What kind of exam do you do and get CCC plus another C? And then Fitch came. Of course, the Minister of Finance has not been excited about these downgrades for a while now. It also issues statements to seek to counter. But I sit back and ask myself, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to fight the reality? But what are the implications of this for us, particularly at this time?
Yeah, so before I come to the implications, remember that the first downgrade that we saw earlier this year, especially the Moody's one, the Ministry of Finance actually issued a very strongly worded statement, more or less criticizing that downgrade and disagreeing with it. Mm-hmm. If you look at the last two downgrades from S&P and Fitch, and you read the similar statements that have been issued, they use a much softer word, that they are disappointed, quote and unquote, in that regard. So you can actually see a bit of a shift in terms of the tone, and also the fact that this recent downgrade or of the sovereign rating or the sovereign debt of the country pretty much in a way reflects some of the reality. And the reality being that particularly, for example, for Fitch, they decided not to downgrade Ghana at the beginning of the year. They said that they were actually going to wait to see if the new revenue measures like the e-levy and things like that will kick in. And as we all know, it has really not performed as much as we expected. Secondly, the media budget that was read by the finance minister only a few weeks ago, many of the market participants that I have interacted with pretty much are saying that the budget is not credible. And I'll explain that in a moment. Okay. To the extent that the numbers within the budget, like the deficit numbers that the government expects to attain at the end of this year of about 6.6%, they already have done more than 5.6% of it by this year. And so what that tells you is that that 1% gap that is left, you have to make significant cuts to your public expenditure if you want to be able to meet those targets. So all those issues pretty much have led to what we've seen with the downgrade. And again, remember that this recent downgrade by Fitch and Moody's is the lowest we have had as a country for the last 20 or so years since they started rating us. Historically, we have been between the B category, and they are like B plus to B minus. So it ranks on a scale of A to D, A being the best, D being a default, and anything in between. And if you go back over 20 years, we have been in that sort of B category, and now we've actually shifted one level below to a C, which is, you know, almost close to or near to a default category. So that is, in a sense, where we are. The question then you ask is, what does that mean for you and I? I mean, the bottom line is the fact that the downgrade ultimately makes the cost of borrowing by the government very difficult. So in the past, the government would have had to sell Eurobonds or raise international money from the international capital markets. Now they are unable to do that. So what that then means is that to be able to finance the budget, they have to raise more money from the domestic sources. So more treasury bills, and even you can even think about even some printing of money in that regard. Mm-hmm. What this does is to prevent us from accessing that international capital market. And so the government, in attempt to finance its budget, ultimately would mean having to borrow more domestically. And what that then does for people like Humphrey, like the Gutta boss, like you and I, is the fact that the cost of borrowing is going to go up, because you're competing more or less with the state for the same resource pool. And that comes back to the fundamental question, which is that who is this, who does the economy of Ghana work for? Is it for the people, or it's more or less for the government in terms of borrowing money to service the debt? Because as we speak right now, any further attempts by the central bank to even hike up their policy rate is going to further choke or constrain liquidity in an already very stressful situation that we find ourselves in. And so for you, for me, for the businesses, the cost of borrowing ultimately is going to go up, and that would then have a subsequent effect in the real economy.
Right. Doc, you, from where you sit, are there real fears that these downgrades affect our opportunity to attract, if you like, investment or financing? Is that what the government is concerned about by reacting with these press statements?
Absolutely, they do affect our ability
I was now going to Dr. Humphrey Dake.
That is the overview, because the essence of the rating agencies is to attest to the entity, business entity, or the country in terms of your classification for doing business, in terms of global assets, in terms of foreign direct investments, and in terms of transparency and deepening the capital market. So if these institutions that give you that attestation of your good standing and your capacity to meet your obligations have contrary opinions, of course, that would be a big worry to the state or the business entity, its ability to attract the right foreign direct investments into their various businesses or financing into government infrastructure projects and other related ones. So that is the biggest concern. And it is clear in the concerns of the access to the euro bond market and how that stream of income that used to come to support government's operations has been impaired, and the consequences as we see going forward. So yes, it is very critical to government, and so it is critical to private sector operators. And I did state in one particular concern that most bulk imports that get assistance or FDIs for imports, and I can mention fertilizer, you could go into the petroleum products, go into other bulk products like clinker and soya beans. Most of these enterprises depend on their international partners. So if you are that exposed, if you even get good transactions going, your pricing will change in terms of your risks, because the ability of the enterprise to dispose of the goods and get the dollars and repatriate to the funding agencies are all within the context of the country's risks. And therefore it is very critical to an entity that is doing big business the country has been downgraded, these implications.
We can say in the common parlance that we became used to or familiar with, I think it was 2015 thereabout, when government was saying we were talking down the economy, and the things we say, even as we sit on radio discussing the economy, have an impact on the economy itself. This is what Fitch and these rating agencies are doing. Is that what it is? And what can be done about that?
Okay, so in that space, when you listen carefully to the Fitch report, and on the economy, they gave it a negative outlook. And the said negative outlook comes with such implication as I'm explaining. In the case of talking down on the economy, where speculators are then driving the exchange rate dynamics, there is an element where we believe that at some stages, the extent of the dramatization and sensationalism could play a part in talking down the economy. But today, the reality and the evidence is everywhere that you can see that the rate at which the depreciation is going on, the rate of which pricing is going on, the real impact at the port of entry. When you go to Tema Port, in recent publication, the Director General indicated about 30% drop in bulk imports. That is evidence. When you chase it down to the institution like the buffer stock or the contractors, you realize that their bills are not being paid, and you could trace it to the inability of the institutions to raise funding to pay that. Those are hard evidence that you could see in the value chain,
right,
as against speculative issues. Mm. So these are very concrete issues on the ground.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're here on Newsfile. This is your most authoritative news analysis platform, and we're discussing what your reality is as far as the downgrades are concerned and the city's, you know, behavior, unrestrained fall, and performing the worst in our part of the world. And my guests are Professor Godfrey Bokping, Professor of Finance and Economics, University of Ghana, Joseph Obeying is National President, Ghana Union of Traders Association, GUTA. Dr. Humphrey Kwesi Ayimdake, you just heard a while ago, is President, Association of Ghana Industries, AGI. Dr. Theo Echampong is Political Risk Analyst and Economist. Now, let me return to the studio and let's have Professor Bokwing speak to us about what practically can we be looking at to stem the tide as far as the city's fall is concerned. I remember there was a certain committee that was set up to do something about forex. We're not hearing anything about those things. I don't know what can be done.
It's beyond them.
It's beyond them?
Yeah, it's beyond them. So the city just doesn't misbehave on its own. There are underlying drivers, put it that way. So we want to come back to what we'll say, the fundamentals. The fundamentals are deteriorating. And therefore, the city would have to readjust quite quickly. And this, you cannot blame it on speculators, no. In fact, you know, if you look at the market and you look at demand and you aggregate the demand vis-a-vis supply in terms of foreign currency, you see that deficit huge. So, and it's not only that the rate, the exchange rate has deteriorated, it's difficult even getting the dollar. It's difficult. Businesses have, there's a queue in terms of meeting their demands and all of that, not to even talk about the exchange rate. That is where we are right now. Mm-hmm. All right. So, but put all these things together. Look at the downgrade. Look at the general sentiment in the economy. We said at the beginning of the year that the 2022 budget was not good enough to assure investors, stakeholders in the economy. The bit of what you see right now is where government is overly confident about its policies and the objectives. And it doesn't turn out to be so. And Samson, I'll give you a couple of examples. In the 2022 budget, government was hoping to raise in excess of 6 billion cedis from the e-levy. With all the problems that we had and all of that, granted that delay implementation, 3 months, if you adjust for that 3 months, you realize that the forecasting itself was wrong. That doesn't lend credibility to your policy. That is not the only thing. In the 2022 budget, government was hoping to achieve inflation rate of 8% with a symmetrical rate of 2%. 3 months or so down the line, look at where we are right now. Inflation is 31.7% and all of that. Look, where, if you see how inflation is broadening across food and non-food inflation, you realize that this is a systematic issue. This is not just a wind blowing. Mm. Look, it's very basic in economics that stable prices are a condition precedent to sustain economic growth. That is at risk right now. And that is why businesses are complaining. They can't plan and all of that. The budget for January could not deliver the same value for February or March or whatever. Now, the bit where we are seeing, where there's even a surprise, you see the central bank saying that they are seeing that inflation is going to decelerate. Then the next release was actually up. What you see happening there is that inflationary pressures are becoming entrenched, right? Leading to what we call the anchoring of inflation expectation rather than anchoring the inflation expectation. When it happens that way, it creates doubt around the credibility of Bank of Ghana's own price stability objective. This is where we find ourselves. Before I come to that, I'll touch briefly on the downgrade. You know what? It wasn't surprising.
The Bank of Ghana is telling us now that we should exercise some calm. It's going to lay out measures that will address the situation.
Do you know something? It is fair to say that how the market will react to that is very real. Bank of Ghana is at its limit when it comes to using monetary policy to address the demand-related inflationary pressures. You only have control in terms of some aspect. And if your belief is that liquidity, excess liquidity is what is driving that, then you deploy your monetary policy appropriately. Exactly. But we have gone past that level. Look, the reality is the Bank of Ghana has thrown their hands into the air. if you look at where the policy rate is and where inflation is right now, the gap tells you clearly that they've given up, because there's a limit to how much you can use the monetary policy to address the demand-related inflation pressures. But the supply cost push that dimension remains, and that is where the fiscal side has to what? Respond. So we'll come to that. The downgrade was slightly expected. Before they released this, our sovereign bond, right, in the international capital market was already trading close to 2,000 basis points above the U.S. Treasury yields. 1 basis point is 1% of 100. 2,000 basis points means 20% above the U.S. Treasury yields. Mm. So before even this rating were released, we had been priced out of the international capital market. Ghana had been locked out completely.
That's right.
So what we need to do now is, how do we re-engineer and improve the fundamentals so that we could enter the market? We were not surprised. The only institution that was surprised was Ministry of Finance with their statement. Mm. Of course, and as Dr. Teo said, they were a bit moderate now compared to earlier. So that is where we are right now. It's getting worse, and the reason I say so is that if you look at the domestic market itself, you see clearly that the government is being priced out. And that is, the government goes to the market to mobilize, let's say, 5 billion cedis, and it could only get 1. Something billion. The difference, the central bank will have to come in terms of deficit financing, right, or printing of cedis to pay down that. Typically, and then let me say this, where we are now, an IMF program is not enough to solve the problem. It's not. And the reason I say so is clearly, if you look at the debt numbers, and per our own preliminary assessment, we are in an unsustainable debt situation. If it happens that way, an IMF intervention is insufficient. What we need to do right now, in addition to probably, and I'll tell you something, unlike 2014, and I think this government is in a better position to be guided by history. In 2014, when the government made an announcement on April 6th, there was a document on hand, drawing from the Senchi consensus. There was also the Ghana Shared Growth and Development Agenda 2, 2014 to 2017. So before the president then made the announcement, there was a homegrown program. So it made it a bit easier engaging the fund, because we had a program. The fund doesn't develop the program for any country. Mm. That is why it's called a Ghana Government Program supported by the IMF. Okay, and remember, we're almost at the same point, right? In 2014, the Minister of Finance then wasn't comfortable going to the fund. The president made an announcement probably when he wasn't even in the country. Mm. So what the president did, and I believe that he was smart, probably we didn't understand him at that time. What he did was to constitute a team led by somebody other than his own finance minister. It was led by Professor Kwesi Botri, mm-hmm. who led that delegation and all of that. Even with that, it took us that long. The call was made on August 6th. The program kicked in on April 3rd. Right now, our government has not developed its program, the fiscal program to be presented.
What is it that has led to the discussion to increase what we were seeking originally to 3 billion?
Look, way back in February, when we did our forum, right, we said that we could get up to $3 billion. You look at the SDR and the competition and all of that. Okay, so that we knew that long ago. If this was realized a couple of weeks ago, we can forgive them, right? So, and even if you get the $3 billion, it's not enough. This year alone, if you look at our outflows in terms of debt level, we are looking at close to $3 billion alone. Next year, we are looking at around $2.8 billion and all of that. So it means that the $3 billion alone is not enough. That's why I was saying that. Mm. In addition to that, government will have to start some kind of debt restructuring negotiation with key investors to make sure that the two go together in a certain way and all of that. Mm. So that is where we are now. So back to this. Confidence is wounded. There is very little trust, and I wonder how many people listen to the finance minister when he speaks. That's very important. Mm. Look, it will be helpful for the Minister of Finance to take a back seat. It will help in terms of the confidence building. And we don't need to...
Now, you are getting louder voices even within the government for him to check out. We've heard from Kwabena Ajapong, who says it's just untenable for Furuata to continue to be there. Kojom Pienim has said the same thing. You have people, former, I think, deputy secretary of the party, Nana Obirebuahi, saying the president should listen to this call for reshuffle. There are those who say that even the budget he presented recently and his pronouncements, people are not able to take them because he's in a place where they can't take the assurances he gives.
That's just the point.
How is that part of the solution to, you know, the hole in which we are?
There are some changes you make because, you know, you are not the only stakeholder in the economy. There are several stakeholders in the economy. And consistently over a certain number of years, you see a certain posture that oftentimes is at variance with reality. Okay, and if it happens that way, I think it will be, it's not only just internal, even from the investor community at the global level, there is a certain level of understanding that it's time for him to go. It will be good for the government. That will send a signal that, look, we are taking a real look, right? We are re-strategizing. Some of them would just be change the composition, right? The signal effect is real. Because the, you see, confidence, its value is more present in its absence. It's just like trust. Its value, market value, is more real in its absence. So that is where we find ourselves. So, and then overall, the size of government, something we need to do that quickly, like yesterday.
Okay.
Because things are deteriorating. Investors are pulling out. When we talk about the debt sustainability, you see that usually the concern is about external debt because you have to generate dollars to be able to pay. For the domestic debt, you have control. Ghana government would never default on domestic debt because the worst thing is to ask the central bank to print more CDs. If you do that, because the investor holding in the domestic debt, part of them are offshore, when they are exiting, they will be demanding dollars. And that is why the depreciation would also continue and all of that. So we are in the situation where if there's anywhere that is more than crisis, that's what we have to use. But the worry is that we are not getting the impression that the government is at the same level and see the situation the way investors, business people, private sector, and the rest of them are seeing it. And for me, that is where the worry is.
I will get us to listen to a few of these people, and then when we return, I should be coming to you, but I would like to have Dr. Theo Echampong give me just a minute of his view on this issue of the finance minister. There are those whose view is that he should bow out not because he's incompetent or he's a bad leader, but there are those who say that he's just terrible. He just doesn't have a handle over the economy. There are those who argue, for example, that the cost of the bank and financial institutions, you know,
clean up,
which he approved 25 billion Ghana cedis, when some argue that we could have saved the situation with 9 billion to 8 billion, it's testament that he doesn't have a handle over the situation. There are those who say that the government's beginning its program with increasing the regions to 6 more, that's doubled expenditure because, and all of that was not properly planned for. And so you can say that there's bad leadership that is not, you know, attributable only to the finance minister. And in 2016, the Nana Akufo-Addo then made a statement that people are beginning to share on social media, asking him what does he think about that. He has said that the current depreciation of the Ghana cedi against the US dollar is because of bad leadership. He put bad in capital letters. Bad leadership. He said we should not be where we are today to buy dollar for 3.72, vote for change. Now, let's listen to the statistical service. Let's listen to Dr. Bawumia. We'll listen to Gabby, who was on this show at the time, about what the IMF can actually do for us or will not be able to do. And then we'll hear Dr. Priscilla Chumesi Bafo, and then we'll come to Dr. Theo Echampong about this thing. What is that factor? What will it do getting rid of the minister?
July 2022 rate of inflation stood at 31.7%, indicating an increase from 29.8%, which was recorded for the month of June 2022. We decompose this from two perspectives, from a food and non-food inflation perspective and from a domestic and imported inflation perspective. From a food and non-food perspective, we record food inflation 32.3% and 31.3% for non-food inflation. From a domestic and imported perspective, we record domestic inflation 29.2% and imported inflation 31.3%. From a regional perspective, we identified Eastern region recording the highest rate of inflation of 38.1% and the Upper East region recording the least inflation of 19.8% for the month of July 2022.
The Ghana city has obtained the dubious distinction of being the weakest performing currency in Africa at this point in time. Interestingly, the NDC Green Book claims exchange rate stability as one of their unprecedented achievements. In an open economy with market determination of prices, exchange rate movements are the most important indicator of underlying macroeconomic fundamentals. As the saying goes, when in doubt, observe the exchange rate. The lesson from history for governments is that you cannot manage the economy with propaganda. In fact, you can engage in all the propaganda you want, but if the fundamentals are weak, the exchange rate will expose you. The type of free fall that we are seeing with the Cedi exchange rate is a vote of no confidence by market players in the management of the economy.
The bottom line, we are going to the IMF because we have been reckless. We have been to the point of even what one could allege criminality in some regard.
Okay, so let's not go back to that debate.
Yes.
The 100 million is coming.
Yeah.
Should we not look at that as some good news? At least the claim that it will help to stabilize the city, it will bring some confidence in the economy, and these are the things we need to keep the economy running.
You see, if you don't deal with the cause, then you may forget that you shouldn't have been here in the first place. And you know, what is the good news? At what cost? One, they say they remove all subsidies. Whether the subsidies are targeted at the poor or not, those subsidies are going. IMF are not necessarily interested in economic growth. IMF, their policies have never been to, as it were, help you create jobs. It is to make sure that, look, you can pay your debts, okay? And paying debts doesn't necessarily directly benefit the Ghanaian. Because look, in Argentina, they've stopped them from even, they have to cut down the salaries to what? Doctors and teachers. In June, if you're not careful, what's happening with the doctors? They're going to go on strike.
No, we have assurance from the government that the service conditions will be provided by then, so there will not be any problems.
Assurance? Oh, really? From which government?
They're working on it, the government.
This government? Yes. Assurance? Really? You know, you ask yourself, where has all the money gone? And what is happening is that we are spending more and more money to pay our debts rather than investing in capital expenditure or capital projects that will create jobs. So you are looking at it, the IMF will not create jobs. The IMF will not make sure that the salaries match up with inflation. IMF will make sure that hopefully, hopefully the reckless spending will go down. And I think that's the positive aspect of it.
Okay. The issue is for the central bank to be able to have a hang on the free fall of the city. And how the central bank can do that is options that allows the inflow of foreign currency, because the demand is certainly outstripping the supply. When you look at handles for earning foreign currency, where is it coming from? And those are the issues that needs to be explored. And when we are exploring that, we also need to keep our eyes on the persistent demand for the, the dollar. Can we explore options where policy initiatives can encourage members of Bhutan to probably find alternatives of producing some of the things they import locally so that we ease the persistent pressure on the currency? So these are issues that needs to be addressed, both from the demand side and the supply side.
Right. Dr. Thierry Champong, so if these remain the facts, as we heard, IMF is actually, whatever IMF is going to do is just about helping you settle debt. And like Gabby said, then they are not coming to help you create jobs. Whatever they are doing is not intended to benefit your people, so to speak. Then Dr. Bawumia, and he also agrees, sort of, that it boils down to leadership. Is that what can be said in these circumstances, and why, to justify the, you know, incessant calls for Kenneth Oriata to take a bow?
You know, I was actually laughing whilst you were playing the tapes from a few years ago, because a lot of the very issues that both the Vice President and Gabby and others were talking about back then are still very much prevalent as we speak, you know, today, in that regard. And the key thing, again, Thompson, is this: that markets react to signal, right? It's a push pull sort of factors. And where we are now is very challenging, and basically you have a crisis of confidence in the Ghanaian economy. And to that extent, the signals that we send from the leadership at the top actually matters. And regardless of who you speak to, at least from where I sit, I think it's become very clear that the finance minister must go. And I am actually even on record as having said same several weeks ago. And not that he's a bad person, I don't think so. But the fact that, you know, you need to send a certain signal to the people who are the partakers in this economy, both the investors, but also, you know, everyday folks like you and I who buy things and consume different goods and services. And I think in that regard, perhaps it is time, you know, to consider bringing on some sort of new phase to chart the path or the course that we need to get to going forward.
Okay.
I mean, the IMF program would always have to be led and driven by the country itself. The priority of the fund is on debt servicing or balance of payments. That's what it's set up to do.
Okay.
And historically, that had been the focus.
Mm.
Although in the last couple of years, or probably about a decade, the tone of the engagement, even of the fund, seems to have shifted a bit to broader conversations about how do you grow your economy and how do you reduce, you know, poverty and inequality within the system. And you can see that even in just the last program that we were in, they were able to safeguard some of the social safety nets, so like the LEAP program and things like that. So it is not wholly or entirely true that the fund itself in contemporary times is just focused on debt servicing. There are other factors that needs to be taken into account. Lastly, I think there was a graphic that I showed to the producer to put on the screen, and it goes back to this exchange rate issues, which Dr. Bania, you know, made a point that says that when we're in doubt, we should observe the foreign exchange rate, and the city had could gain the dubious distinction of being the worst performing currency at that time. In fact, that is still pretty much the same. And you can calculate or look at the rate of depreciation. Year to date, we're talking 30-something, it's about 32%. If you look at all of the depreciation from the then government to when they exited, it was about 52%. And if you work out the cumulative depreciation again from January of 2017 to August of 2020, you're also talking about 53-54%, right?
Okay.
So you can actually see that whether it is NPP or it is NDC, if you look at the hard numbers and you use the exchange rate as the one of the key metrics in terms of determining the health of the economy, both of the governments, as we speak currently, score very poorly on that metric.
Okay, thank you. You heard Dr. Priscilla Chimensibafo of the University of Ghana say directly, among others, that Guta may be able to help. Often, you guys have been mentioned. What do you say in reaction to that? And when once it's done, finally, I would like us to, all of you, to tell us how the government or the managers of the economy should prepare us for what it is that they are doing to, you know, manage the situation. Because as we have heard, it will get worse before it gets better. What sort of, you know, program should government begin to roll out so that people can begin, you know, to warm up to what is likely, you know?
Thank you very much, Samson, for this opportunity to clear ourselves once and for all on this issue, because it makes us very uncomfortable when we are talking about depreciation, but we may not be the cause after all. To tell the truth, we do trading. Trading is very important. It's the distributive arm of manufacturing. So we cannot take it, that segment from manufacturing. And let me also say that manufacturing is not complete unless it reaches the final consumer.
That's
and
right. Serve
as the vehicle. And so the manufactured goods that we have here in Ghana is being sold by us, the trading community, and the shortfall. And the shortfall is what we are sourced from elsewhere. Unless maybe at this time we are saying that we don't have to import. If our direction is not to go on excessive importation, then it lies on policy direction. It lies on how we make our investment and all that. So if you do your regulations and all that, your policy guidelines and all that to suggest that we are departing from excessive importation, then it's within the framework of what the government wants. So I want to tell all of us that categorically clear that about 80% of the local manufacturers migrated from trading. Because we do trading, know the volumes of what we trade in, and then we migrate. So it's a natural migration from trading. And then trading have become the breeding grounds for most of us who do not have mainstream government work and all that. So we should know that it's a very essential. So the I've established the fact that we buy all the manufactured goods, and then we also migrate to manufacturing. So we should establish that.
Okay.
And so we don't want anything to come and impede this migration and all that, because we know that that's the way to go. But we have a shared responsibility. The shared responsibility that we have in here is that we do excessive importation, and that is true, and we are very part of it. But let me also tell you that our share of this problem is only 15%. All the traders, the importers from northern region, Brahafo region, Ashanti region, western region, Greater Accra region, central region, the importers that go to Dubai, to Turkey, to China and all that. You know that some of us go to China or Dubai, and then we consolidate, about 20 people consolidate and bring only 120-footer container or 140-footer container. Are you aware of that? That we do consolidation. So 20 people bring just one container. The bulk of importation here in Ghana is those institutional import that is being done by these multinationals. 85%. So much as you are telling us to migrate into manufacturing, I've told you that that's the natural progression. Mm-hmm. But the same cannot be said for these multinationals. Why are we shying away from using our investment law to contain and curtail importation? It's so easy. Why don't we do that? That you tell me the trader, the indigent, that patronized made in Ghana goods, and I've confirmed and told you that we have the shops, and then we patronize the made in Ghana goods, but you cannot do the same for the foreign foreigner who has come, the foreign expatriate who is doing the supermarket. That your investment law should guide this supermarket to have a shelf life about 30% of locally made goods, and that our investment law cannot do. That we have opened our investment to trading so that it's derailing the effort of local manufacturers. And that is so huge to the extent that you do not also allow them to bring correspondent funds that they will use it to import these goods. All that one need as a foreign entity, a very big entity at that, is to show an evidence of investment of 1 million in goods, and so little times cash is shown. So the person just gets the GIPC certificate with just an evidence of 1 million investment in goods. And then the floodgates is open for dumping, that they bring in so many containers into the country and just repatriate the money. And at this stage, all that they need to do is to pack these dollars. They don't think about the value. So how, whatever amount that one gives to them, they take it.
All right.
Because he has no obligation and he has not actually invested any money. The investment law should be made so that, having given him the license, then you tell him, what money are you going to use to import these goods that you are going to bring? And then he said that this year I'm bringing 500 containers, isn't it? So the 500 containers, you ask him, what is the value of these 500 containers? Then it's $10 million. Then he's supposed to bring the $10 million lodged at Bank of Ghana. It's not for government of Ghana. It's for him to use it to bring his own goods. Because his father, his grandfather has not made any cocoa farm where that will bring this forest, for you to just give him open-handed opportunity. And then when they feed on your forest as vultures and hyenas and pythons and all that, you come and blame the local importer. It is not fair. So we have all the opportunity to use the investment laws to contain.
Okay, that's a point. That's a point you have made quite eloquently. Now I'm coming to all of you to get a roundup, to begin to wind up. Now, Dr. Imdake, we're being told of, I don't know, but it does appear that if you agree with that position, should government begin to roll out a plan to get people to begin to warm up? Is it where you also stand, that things are going to get even, you know, dire? There are people who are saying, for example, that we are likely to experience fuel shortage, forex exchange crunch is imminent, and so on and so forth. Where do you stand, and what should be done?
This position, I called it the collective action. In the space of the collective action, we need a clarion to rally around the flag to develop an enhanced domestic program with apolitical, so that we can together develop a good plan. My second state is a concrete action. In the concrete action, you have programs and you have activities and policy-related issues. The sector of the economy is weakened. And one of the interventions that I'll table, I know my colleague will raise a concern. To the extent that the productive sector is weak, you might need to reverse the benchmark discount value to its original position. Secondly, you might need to go further to reduce import duty on industrial raw materials. Thirdly, you might need to the tariff regime on the power should be biased to industry to stimulate and rejuvenate the productive sector. That is the basis upon which cash flow, revenue streams, all the targeted revenue models into the enhanced program will be credible. We cannot have a credible program if we cannot find a deliberate intervention for the productive sector to start. Thirdly, a demonstrable action plan where we need the executive to lead a demonstrable austerity measure, a demonstrable austerity measure that can get everybody to buy in. And that we have stated a number of times. Yes, they have demonstrated a 30% reduction in their various salaries. I guess they need to do beyond that. That's the demonstrable action we need.
Mm. When you say do beyond that, which other areas are you looking at? I've heard Kwabena Japon, for example, say that he's seen, you know, a fleet of V8s fresh in town, and he doesn't understand why the government will be involved in such purchases. The need to reduce the size of government is still on the table.
All right, so how do you ascertain that? We look for government deploying what a very good monitoring and evaluation system to attest to the attainment of those figures and demonstrate to the populace that, look, the 30%, this is how far we've gotten. This is the evidence. That's why I use the word demonstrable action.
Right.
So I think that is what I'll go for, and to get the confidence of the people. The confidence in the system is so low. From a business barometer report conducted by AGI, we are at the most lowest point in our confidence assessment in terms of barometer report. So we need to call on government to do that demonstrable action. Okay. So yes, we will go through a bit of pain to develop the productive sector, and the value chain will pick it up from there. This is our position going forward.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ayimdake, for that. Now, Professor Bokpin, for example, Professor H. Kwesi Prempeh makes this post. He says, Ghana's economy needs fundamental re-engineering, not financial engineering. Mm.
Yes, I agree.
I agree.
Except to the extent that when you are done with the fundamental re-engineering, the financial re-engineering must also be aligned, because government overall economic strategy has to be financed. Mm. Okay, so that's why it's very...
So what should we be doing? Are you also of the view that things will get even worse? Okay. Like, how worse can it get?
Well, we don't want to get to the situation where we want to cite, like, Sri Lanka or others. In fact, these days, when I pray for Ghana. When you look at the data and the outlook, it's a bit concerning, right? Even from BDCs, bulk oil
distributors,
from retailers, and all of that is huge. Even when we say let's build the capacity, the productive sector of the economy, more than 70% of business input cost is imported. And when that happens, it means that even if you want to scale up the productive sector, you still need to demand more. If we were adding value to that and exporting, would have been getting corresponding foreign exchange to that extent. But we are not doing much of that. But something
else. Do you think the Ghana Beyond Aid is a slogan?
Oh, it's already beyond us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ghana Beyond Aid is already beyond us. Of course, we knew from day one that Ghana Beyond Aid is not anti-aid or aid rejection. It's actually in need of more aid. From the Addis Ababa Declaration of Domestic Revenue Mobilization as a key to attaining the Sustainable Development Goals, we haven't done quite well. Historically, over the years, and I'm sure we'll get to that point with the Office of the Special Prosecutor in the issue. Over the years, we have not been able to collect sufficient tax revenue relative to the size of our economy. That's a big problem. Whilst that's a problem, we have been largely inefficient at the expenditure side also. I could just give you some few statistics. Annually, Ghana loses in excess of $2 billion through trade meets invoicing alone. That's almost 67% of how much we'll get from the IMF. Through corruption, the costing, we are losing annually $3 billion annually through corruption, through procurement infractions and all of that. That is almost how much we would have gotten from the IMF spread over 3 years. Now, if you look at the Ghana loses as much as we're able to collect by way of non-oil tax revenue. These leakages do not go to the sea. These leakages are traceable to individual pockets, institutions, and all of that. And that is why a good number of Ghanaians, right, are living lifestyles that cannot be explained by their regular pay slip. And that is driving the fraud in the property sector in Ghana. Look at the prices and all of that. So look, to get to where we want to get to, we certainly have to, it's not everything that you want to negotiate, right? So there's room to scale up revenue generation without burdening the faithful few. Even if you look at it across the various, the existing tax handles, VAT, the inefficiency in there, CIT, corporate income tax, pay as you earn, direct income tax and all of that. About 75% of the tax-paying population in there are not honoring their taxes. Yeah. So if you look at all these things, it's not like we can't, it doesn't lend to we throwing our hands into the air that there's nothing we can do. Look, the solution is within us. It's more about the leadership, okay, right? To get to the, and in crisis moment, look, it's very basic. Adopt a lean management approach. And that is where cost cutting, not just reducing 70%, right? Mm-hmm. Cut also the ministries and number of ministers is the signal. We could get back to that, right? One day when you think that we can afford to have this, but you need to do something that resonates with the broad-based stakeholders that they can get along, because government alone can't get out of this crisis without all of us getting along.
That's right.
It's very fundamental, yeah, right?
Please, before you come in.
Yes.
Don't you also think that it's about time that we assemble, we saw our human resource empty a table,
like a Senchi situation?
Exactly.
Dr. Thierry Champon, I need to come back to you for your final point before I come to Guta. What do you know? We hear government say, "Oh, we will turn this, you know, around in 2 years. What do you know is the way to turn things around in 2 years? And we say 2 years because we are looking for elections in 2 years. We are looking to elections in 2 years. So perhaps all that I'm asking is it possible that we know what government's program is? You know, and beyond IMF, which we have listened to, you know, our friends, now in government, when in opposition, when they said that the IMF is actually not something you should be happy about, what is it that the government should be engaging the citizenry? Have we gotten to a point where we could, like Operation Feed Yourself, kind of mobilization of the citizens so that they get ready, so they know what is coming up?
Yeah, I think we need to engage more stakeholders. Part of the challenge or the difficulties people have had, particularly with the administration, is the fact that some of the decisions looks like being taken within a very small caucus without consulting more broadly industry, you know, academia or think tanks and things like that. And in that regard, I think even the enhanced domestic program that they're talking about, we need to see that paper, and we need to have a national stakeholder forum to actually see what exactly this enhanced domestic program would look like. So it has to be more bottom up rather than top down. It's not just putting something together and bringing the stakeholders around the table and asking them, "Oh, do you like this or not?" But rather need to solicit extensively the input of people like Guta, AGI, academics, etc., to input into that process.
Yeah.
But the other key thing, again, maybe just to highlight, is the fact that I don't see the economy being turned around in 2 years. That statement was made with a certain political imperative, which is that you've got an election in about 2 years' time. Typically, for even an IMF program, you're talking 3-4 years. The last program we exited was 4 years. And even that, we didn't meet all of the program benchmarks in that regard. So I personally struggle to see, given the extent of the difficulties, given the extent of the mess that we find ourselves in, how we are going to be able to turn things around within a year or two. We would make some progress. I mean, don't get me wrong, but it's not going to be the extent of the change that we all sort of anticipate.
Doc, before you tell us how government should engage and what programs should be laid out, as I said earlier, I've had the privilege, very rare privilege, of sitting down with some really big time business people in the country, and they determine quite a sizable amount of what makes our economy tick. And my question has been, which is my fear, that when things go up, prices go up, they don't really ever come down in this country or in Africa. So it took me back to not too long ago, somebody sat on this studio and said we could be getting to a Zimbabwe situation. I got really angry with that person and said, don't do that. We will never get there. Because that Zimbabwe thing where they were printing millions of dollars in one note and it was worthless. You could buy chicken with $1 million of Zimbabwe money. Will things come down in that regard, as in prices reducing?
The only way, unfortunately, is up. And I don't think that we're going to get to a Zimbabwe-style situation. I think it's more likely a Zambia-style situation. We had Zambia actually did default on its debt back in November of 2020. And then it's taken a long time now to even agree on an IMF, sort of program. But, we're far off from anything Zimbabwe style. The fact is, yes, inflation is going up and the cost of living is going up. And that also would have a ripple effect even on, the political environment. We saw some protests only a few weeks ago. And with an election around the corner, if you don't manage to stabilize the situation, we will get more of the labor unions, get more opposition groups, get more civic society groups out on the streets protesting over the cost of living. This week alone, in Sierra Leone, we've seen similar massive protests, and about 16 or so people have been killed. And the president has even had to impose a curfew overnight in Sierra Leone in that regard. So those are the big challenges that we need to do. But how to fix it? I think in the short term, there are three things that can be done. Mm. The first thing is that, for me, the government needs to send the right signal. And how to do it is to reduce their resort to borrowing from the domestic market. So all the T-bills and the printing of money and things like that, in an attempt to compensate for the lack of access to the capital market, is further driving that inflation that we're seeing. And so the reduction of the government in terms of its borrowing from the domestic market ultimately will create up space so that the banks can actually lend to the real economy. That's the first thing. And you can see the last two auctions that the Bank of Ghana even made for some of the T-bills, they weren't all taken up because the rates that we're even offering was about 27%, inflation at 35% is actually a negative return in that regard. Number two, I think the IMF program must be fast-tracked. And it must also be done with an application to what we call the G20 Common Debt Framework. And that what that would allow us to do is to restructure and delay some of our external debt. And that would create some space for us to fast-track, priority spending. And because that's, again, very important in terms of policy credibility and overall debt sustainability. Mm. And the third thing, which I think we all agree around the table, is that we need to cut down on the size of government. And that is not just doing a reshuffle, but it would ultimately allow us to reduce the public expenditure. And I was worried when the president said that his ministers have been quote-unquote outstanding. I don't think the president necessarily needs to tell us, because we will know. He who feels it knows it. We would know if those interventions and the work of the ministers was improving our bottom line. And as we speak currently, it is not.
Okay. Now, finally, Mr. Obeng, so how would you like that the leaders of the republic sort of led a setting process to get you to embrace what is going on?
Yeah, thank you very much. First, in my press statement, I have said that government should reconvene the Forest Committee. I was inside, I was part of it.
Yeah.
Prof was saying that
it's beyond that.
They let us stop, because the Forest Committee, the essence of it was not to solve a particular year's problem. It was, how are we going to make sure that we are going to boost export? How are we going to make sure that productivity is increased? It was a broader thing than we expected. But you see that it turned political and people were criticizing, and so we saw a stillbirth.
Well, now the focus has always been, we are not the cause of it. It's Ukraine, it's COVID.
No, but I wouldn't side with the blame on Ukraine. We all admit, and we cannot take it, the fact that government is saying that the cause of the most of our problem, likewise the whole world, most of the countries, even including America and the European countries, that Ukraine war is a cause, and then the impact of COVID is also. But the Ukraine war, the end is not in sight. So it has become a normal thing. So are we going to dwell on this problem as a cause forever? No. When crisis come, it brings the best out of leadership. And this is how we have to do things differently to save this problem. And not only government, but all of us. All right. And that's why I'm calling government to bring all Ghanaians on board. We own the problem together and we solve it together.
All right.
Divide of politics and all that.
Thank you very much. I got a bit scared when I heard from Joe Jackson saying that the current economic situation is one of the toughest that he has experienced since the 1981 situation. How old was I then? But I remember that I felt it, because I knew what my parents were going through at the time. I remember how kinky had to be bought when it was not cooked.
Not cooked.
All right, so we take a quick break and return to deal with questions of the OSP. It does appear that the OSP has saved us a lot of money quietly without us knowing. But on this issue of the 1 million that has been able to retrieve from the La Bianca company, how do we assess its work? Did it err, or corruption is fighting the OSP? We'll be right back.